Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And yes, that's still Jimi Hendrix. As we remember him, he passed away, left us on this day in 1970. We are switching gears here as we begin to talk about what is going on with the Islamic State, the United States, its response, and the complexity of all of this. We are joined here by Jenna McLaughlin once again. She is editorial fellow in Mother Jones Washington Bureau. Jenna, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hi, good to be here.
And Dr. Fahim Yunus is with us. Fahim Yunus is National Secretary of Education for the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community and Clinical Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of Maryland. Good to have you back in the studio, Fahim.
Thank you very much, Mark.
And encourage you all to join us here at 410-319-8888. Email your thoughts to us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet at Mark Steiner and comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, 410-319-8888. Jenna, this is, you know, we've had many debates and conversations on this program and around all of this, and some of the more interesting debates have taken place between people who were part of the left-wing resistance to Saddam, who also opposed the war, and the left in America who opposed the war in Iraq, but are taking very different positions about where we are now. There's a complexity to this, I think, is because of the invasion of Iraq and tearing apart of the nation of Iraq by the American, but by our own government, that has unleashed this complexity in ways that I think nobody really knows how to put their hands around.
Yes, absolutely. I would agree. This issue with Iraq and also Syria is certainly different than it was years ago when we were first there. Partially, absolutely, because a lot of us acknowledge that the U.S. had a big role in the instability that's contributed to the growth and eruption of the Islamic State. And I think that's certainly a part of it. But your use of the word complexity is definitely accurate, because I mentioned this at one point that the polling about people kind of being cautiously optimistic or for our kind of involvement in Iraq and Syria, I think it's partially just because we feel that threat on our home front. Even if the threat isn't immediate, we don't think that people are going to invade us or anything. We see these videos of our own journalists getting beheaded, a British national being beheaded, and we see that right on our Twitter feeds. That kind of thing makes it more real for people, I think. That's definitely a part of it. And just the level of humanitarian horror that's happening right now, I think, is getting a lot of citizens' attention and getting us to kind of think that we can't just sit by and do nothing.
Fahim.
Completely agree. The word complexity is the right word. It's like a surgeon. You know, you open someone's belly and then you walk away. You say, all right, somebody else is going to put it together. That patient is not going to survive. So I always say that the ISIS of 2013, in part, is the collateral damage of 2003. These are the same 15, 16-year-old boys who were running around at that time, and we slaughtered their families. Not, you know, hate to use that term, but that is the reality for someone whose family was bombed, whose house was demolished, and we just walked away saying it's collateral damage. 10 years later, look where they are. And this is the first thing right now, I believe, is an acknowledgement. I have not seen a single person come and clearly acknowledge that that was a mistake. You know, even the polls are now, the American public is acknowledging that. But we need to acknowledge it as a number one gesture of peace, that that was a mistake, that the war on terror actually has created more terror.
We saw, I want to come back to what you're saying, Fahim, because if your community, the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, was living in Iraq or Syria rather than Pakistan at this moment, you would be targeted by IS.
No question.
To be wiped off the face of the earth.
No question about it.
Right?
Yep.
So I want to come back to that thought about what should the response be? And you know, you saw in the paper, I saw in the papers this morning, Jenna, that the Australian government had this massive sweep, police arresting people in Australia, claiming that there were Islamic State cells that were about to capture and behead Australians. What do we know about the veracity of all that?
I mean, honestly, these kind of articles coming out about various different governments arresting or kind of patrolling or monitoring citizens that are suspected terrorists have been out for months now. And they're starting to ramp up in intensity as people are more and more aware of all the Westerners that are flocking over to Iraq and Syria through Turkey in the most cases. And it's definitely becoming more prevalent. Certain people that are either suspected or have made any kind of proclamation of wanting to go to Iraq or Syria. The governments are really ramping down on those people. And, yeah, I don't think that that's going to stop anytime soon. Although I'm not sure how much preventative measure that can create.
And talking about preventative measure, I think that really goes to the heart of the question. I want our listeners to join us here with your thoughts at 410-319-8888 about what a Western response should be, if there should be one, or how what kind of response the Muslim and Arab world should make with this at 410-319-8888, and the complexities of who's working with whom at the moment to take on IS. I mean, so right now we see the President Barack Obama saying there will be no boots on the ground, American boots. Well, already there are boots on the ground, and we're seeing the head of the U.S. Armed Forces, the chief of staff of the U.S. Armed Forces, saying that that if I will advise the president to send troops there if I think that's what we have to do to back up the Kurdish and Shiite forces and the Iraqi army that's battling that's battling IS. And a lot of people in America are saying, Fahim, this is a slippery slope into what we just left.
Right. And Mark, you raised a very good point. My Ahmadiyya Muslim community were persecuted in many parts, particularly some of the Muslim countries around the globe. But our Khalifa, who we believe is the real Khalifa of Islam, who's been there, you know, the caliphate has been there for over 100 years, has really answered this question in a nuanced fashion. It's again going to the example or a metaphor of a surgery. You don't just stitch the skin and walk away. You have to put together multiple layers in that belly that you've opened up. There are a multi-pronged approach. It's not just war or no war. We need to first make sure that we need to turn up the heat on Saudi Arabia and some of these Muslim countries that, you know, secretly we are in bed with, but they are the ones funding much of this Wahhabism and this terrorism. We need to have a just peace in Palestine and Israel. Those are the epicenters. You know, we need to then empower the folks like Ahmadiyya Muslim community and many other Muslim groups who will theologically engage with these extremists over a long enough period of time. None of that can be done remotely, and none of that can be done by Americans. We need to empower people on the ground and continue to stitch every layer of that human body for a long-lasting peace.
So, I mean, Jen, I mean, this is something I think, you know, we saw Congress really being really kind of in flux and not clear about what it wanted to do, and Republicans wanting to support it, not wanting to support a Democrat, saying that I can't really vote for giving money to the Syrian Free Army, but and then being pushed into it by Nancy Pelosi. And we don't even know what the Free Syrian Army means anymore. Who is that? And where's the,
right,
where
yeah.
the arms going? I mean, and now we just saw this morning that the IS, which has an incredibly powerful army, more than people realize, obviously, have just moved into Kurdish Syria, taken over 16 villages, pushed people out, and the Kurdish Democratic Party in Syria calling for Kurds from all over to come in and fight IS and push them back. I mean, so I was trying to figure out what my question is, but go ahead, Jenna.
Right, yeah. I was trying to parse the, there were several parts of those statements I wanted to respond to.
Go ahead. Go, please do.
Absolutely. Definitely the question of, you know, who is the Free Syrian Army? Who are the moderates that still remain in Syria? That's a huge question right now that, honestly, experts are not in agreement about. I went to a conference the other day where former Ambassador Robert Ford of Syria, the U.S. ambassador to Syria, who quit this summer, he was saying that though these forces are beaten down a lot, they're a lot smaller, they're more local, they're disorganized, there are still moderate forces in Syria that we can ally with, that we can work with. Though there are other experts that think that this kind of thing, there was a New York Times op-ed, I think, a couple days ago that said that this moderate opposition is not something that we could dream of really relying on to focus against ISIS, while others have said that the Kurds are a force that would be useful for that, and they've proven that thus far in Iraq. So that's definitely an incredibly complicated question about which forces we can rely on to work with in Iraq and Syria, and it's definitely part of this incredibly complicated and complex coalition that we've been discussing a little bit so far that Obama's laid out. And obviously there are some odd couplings here, but the idea of the coalition is very necessary and something that I've heard a lot of people say, that we need to have these partnerships in order to have any kind of success over there. We need to not just go on in there and try to do things ourselves. We need the Arab nations, we need Turkey, a lot of different partners that might take a little time to suss out and kind of plan on our side, essentially. So definitely, again, complexity is the word of the day.
Just to dovetail off of that, because you made a very good point about this being very powerful. I tend to disagree, Mark. I believe that they're not very powerful. Geez, they can't even fill an NFL stadium. These are not even 30,000 people. They're out in the desert, very clear target. They're not, you know, embedded in human beings. What is powerful? What is scary?
I mean,
is the idea.
I don't necessarily mean powerful.
No, I agree, Jenna. I agree with you. Yeah. My point was, I think we're saying the same thing. My point was, it's their ideology that is extremely powerful, that has penetrated from Australia to Pakistan. To give you a data point, we are being told that 40 countries, there's a coalition of 40 countries, there's people, Muslim youth from 81 countries fighting with ISIS against us today. That is what I call a very dangerous coalition. They, without any power, you know, without any White House clout, have created a coalition from 81 countries. Muslim youth are flocking there, and maybe in very small numbers today. But my worry is that there is a swing vote in the middle of that global Muslim community, which is becoming increasingly alienated, increasingly frustrated with their own autocrats, increasingly frustrated with poverty, lack of jobs. And all they have to turn to is this radical ideology. And that is where the power lies for ISIS.
Right.
But, you know, this does beg the question then, and I really, listeners, what do you think at 410-319-8888? It's our lives, our tax dollars, our young people who will be doing this fighting if it goes on, that there's a real danger, it seems, of the United States getting deeply involved in the midst of this crisis and being sucked into a quagmire that we can't get out of, and you also can't parse. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, we right now you have with Shia militias going with the Peshmerga of the Kurds fighting IS in Iraq, which came out of Iraq in the first place. But that could blow up in a heartbeat between them because of Kurdish independence beliefs with that affects Iran and Turkey. I mean, there's a real danger here for Barack Obama, for the United States, for the next president to become immersed in the middle of the struggle.
Right, that's definitely true. I heard a few experts that kind of, I think it was Robert Ford, put together three different pillars kind of that the strategy depends on. One of them is Iraq, one of them is Syria, and one of them is this international coalition. And he just couldn't stress enough that it's going to be an incredibly turbulent ride. And I mean, I don't think that there's anything that anyone can say to get past that, to say that this will be simple, that we can get out at a certain point, that we can, you know, do a certain thing. It's just going to be incredibly complicated. But however, a lot of people have expressed optimism at Obama's plan because it's a plan that could work, essentially. And then we can kind of go from there. We kind of can't expect much better, I feel like.
Let me go get a phone call and come right back to you, Fahim. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Donna, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, hi. I have a question. Because these young men who are gravitating to this radical group are suffering from what we call socioeconomic issues because they're frustrated, what is the United States and other countries going to do to make that change? Because if we're seeing it over there, we're going to see it in Africa with a lot of the radical groups as well. So how do we start providing the necessary economic means that these young people don't need to have to gravitate to those type of radical groups? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donna, because it is true. If you look at what's happening, not just in the Northeast Africa and Somalia, but if you look at in the western part of the continent with Boko Haram and the power they've been able to create in certain parts of Northeast Nigeria and neighboring nations, This is not just isolated to IS, and there is a connection here. Something has been unleashed. So go ahead, Fahim.
That's a great question, and this is the irony, Mark. In 1936, we knew the answer. When Dale Carnegie first wrote the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
I have to hear this correlation.
I'm telling you, that is the mother of all self-help books, and this is the irony. This is the country that taught the world how to make friends and build influence. Today, we've forgotten. It's the same old principle of Carnegie. If you look at it, it's a long list, but there is something at the heart of all those principles. You have to be genuine and sincere. That is at the heart of every step of Carnegie. When you smile at people, it better be genuine. When you help them out, it better be sincere. And that is where we are lacking, I think, because we are losing those poll numbers year by year. And nearly 10%, just to give you another data points, 10% of the Palestinians believe that we are a neutral broker in Israel-Palestine. I was just giving a talk in Baltimore the other day, 100 people in the crowd, 95% of the people did not believe that we are trustworthy. So that is the issue. We need to just simply, as we drop bombs over there, we need to drop millions of copies of Dale Carnegie here in the U.S.
I think that the 90% of Palestinians are probably right. The United States is not a fair broker in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and it's not been ever. But I, from my analysis and perspective, but I think that Jenna, I think that Americans have a right to be very skeptical of increased U.S. involvement. I just a little pushback on you saying Obama's plan could be good. I'm not sure what the plan is, we are sending in Air Force and Navy fighter pilots along with a few other nations to back IS up while the Iraq and Kurdish forces are moving in. But that could lead to all kinds of other things. We already have troops on the ground. So what is it about this plan you think makes sense?
Honestly, the plan definitely doesn't have that many specific things that you mentioned right there. It's definitely still forming. I think the thing that makes the most sense is the coalition that we've spoken about is allying with Arab nations, with European nations that have a stake in this as well, and relying on their expertise and their information on the ground to assist us. And I think that Obama's pretty sure on the no boots on the ground thing. As soon as his military officials said that, he came out the next day and said that he absolutely refused to kind of back that up. Right now I honestly think that our best part of the strategy is the coalition.
We have to take a very short break. We're going to come right back for some closing thoughts from our two guests before we turn to Chauncey Whitehead and Miss Ernestine coming into the studio. We're going to break with Kisses Sweeter Than Wine by Jimmy Rogers, born on this day in 1933. We'll be right back.
Well, our children, they number just about four.
Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze. Maybe this whole world could do a little LSD. It might help them out with this crisis. I don't know. But Jimi Hendrix left us here on this day in 1970. Need a little something like that, given what we're facing. Dr. Fahim Yunus is with us, National Secretary of Education for the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community. Jenna McLaughlin, Editorial Fellow in Mother Jones Washington Bureau. Closing thoughts on the two of you. I think that especially from your perspective on Capitol Hill, Jenna, what you think will be the next steps in Washington? What do you think they'll do?
Well, honestly, I think the next immediate steps that we'll directly see are, the vote from Senate on whether or not they're going to approve the plan to arm the moderate Syrian rebels, which Congress passed yesterday. So
whoever they may
I think
be.
That that's, what was that?
I said whoever they may be.
Yes, exactly. Whoever they may be. That's definitely still right. A question that needs to be answered, which, some of these forces may be people like the Islamic Front, who are definitely not exactly moderate. But that's definitely still to be seen. But I think that's kind of the next thing that we'll have to see is whether or not Senate will pass this and how that kind of plan will pan out.
And Fahim, closing thought from you about this, what you think the West response should be? I'm curious about that.
Of course, there's a short-term response, which will be to some degree a military response, but we are in it for a long game. What is the end game? In the end, we are fighting an ideology. the only way to win this war is to replace that ideology with a better ideology. And I strongly believe that as we are building a military coalition, we need to build a coalition of ideas, and the Ahmadiyya Muslim community would absolutely would want to be a part of that coalition, because we are the only community with a caliphate, with a Khalifa for over a century. The only difference is the Khalifa of ISIS is asking his members to wage a jihad of the sword, and the Khalifa of Ahmadiyya Islam is asking his members to wage a jihad of the pen. And the world needs to know about that compare and contrast between those two movements, because they are at the heart of the long game here.
Well, Janet McLaughlin, once again, thank you so much for the reporting you do down in D.C. and joining us once again, editorial fellow at the Mother Jones Washington Bureau. Always good to have you with us.
Thanks so much. It was good to be here.
And Dr. Fahim Yunus, always good to see you in the studio. Thank you so much
for
being
with us once again. My pleasure, Mark. Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we are going to be joined for our monthly look at physical fitness. We're going out with Jimmy Witherspoon. Ain't Nobody's Business. Died on this day in 1997. We'll be right back.